Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
On this week's podcast, we're talking to Scott Wilson, President Europe and Africa at BCW Global. Scott joined BCW in 2010, having previously been at Porto Novelli and Weber Shandwick. He currently leads BCW across Europe and Africa, and today we're going to chat about PR trends post-COVID, including what PR clients are currently buying, the resurgence of corporate PR, and the tension, if there is one, between integrated communications and the benefits of skilled specialisations in public relations. It's the return of the champion to the PR Moment podcast. If you haven't listened to his previous episode he did with us a few years back, that podcast remains our most listened to ever episode. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you. It's the second album syndrome, Ben.
Let's hope not. Now, before we start, do make sure you've taken a look at PRCA's National Conference, which is a face-to-face event, touch wood, and cross fingers. But if that doesn't quite work out, you can also live stream it if you prefer. It's a full-day event in London on July the 8th, exploring communication and influence in a post-pandemic world. So I suppose somewhat similar to the theme of this podcast. Speakers include communications leaders from the likes of Google and IKEA, as well as big names, including Alistair Campbell and Sophie Morgan.
If you haven't entered yet and you specialise in creative public relations work, the final deadline for the Creative Moment Awards is on the 8th of July. All the details are on the Creative Moment Awards microsite.
Scott, welcome. So come on then, as of now, not looking back over 18 months, but as of now, which bits of PR are growing and which bits are still a bit slow?
Well, that's a question. Looking forwards, not backwards. And I think that's what we're all about at the moment, isn't it? So I would probably say, and I will use this, we recently surveyed a lot of our client leaders right across the Europe and Africa region to ask them kind of what they're interested in, what their key clients are interested in. So there is a bit of empirical data behind this as well. So a couple of things I'll call out. One is probably no surprise to anyone, no let up in the demand interest of clients in the ESG purpose sustainability space, which is probably self-evident to anyone listening to this podcast, whether you're on agency side or client side. Maybe more interesting to me is an ongoing interest in probably what I would call business transformation and how it relates to employee engagement, employee brand, which I think was interesting because we did see a lot of that obviously in the early days of the pandemic 2020. But I was surprised to see the continuing demand from our clients in that space. Above and beyond that, you know, I think it's no surprise to see healthcare, technology, senior corporate public affairs doing well. But hopefully as well, and I spent a lot of my career in brand marketing. Great to see actually the brand marketing piece now, absolutely clear evidence this is coming back. And believe it or not, actually some significant movements also in travel and tourism.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. The brand marketing piece is interesting. I mean, it's busy in that. There's a lot of business out there, isn't there? Things seem to be taking a little while to be won, but frankly, they probably always did. But it's certainly the guys on the brand marketing piece, there's a lot of pitches and there's some good work to be had.
Yeah, I think doing one thing is, you know, ultimately is I have a business management responsibility, but ultimately I came into the industry because of creativity and the quality of the work. And I think so much of the great standout creative work historically comes from the brand marketing space, quite rightly. So it's good for all of us that comes back. And, it's great to see when you are judging awards that even during the difficult period last year, there is that creative work still out there that just continues to flourish.
Yeah, I mean, just to we digress a little bit, but I haven't just chaired some of the panels on there for the PR Moment Awards. The idea that the standard of creative work was suffered a bit last year is, you know, that's just not correct, is it? I mean, some of the The innovation and creativity that we saw during that pandemic and the campaigns during the pandemic is absolutely stand out. Just talk to me a little bit about ESG, purpose, sustainability, because if we're not careful, those are going to become a bit too sort of standard terms that we... When you say clients, that sort of work is in demand, what do you mean? Do you mean it at a strategic level? Do you mean communicating the sort of sustainability credentials of businesses? What sort of work are you guys doing in that area?
It's the full gamut, actually, Ben. So yeah, first off, I agree with you. It's such a catch-all term now. I think the danger stroke reality is that it starts to become a bit of a hygiene factor for all clients, all briefs. But it is such a catch-all. But its starting point, I think, is important. I mean, I think at a corporate level, it is abundantly clear now, and corporate communications professionals, of course, have been dealing with this for some time, that sort of, divide between brand does, brand says, I think that's well understood now. And that's obviously therefore ensuring that to be a genuinely purposeful organization, it's not just about selling a story or telling a story. The storytelling part is still important, but it has to be based on something that is credible and authentic. I think on top of that now as well, we're seeing actually brands in and of themselves also feeling that a brand needs a purpose, often baked into sustainability. And one of the things I think that we're seeing in there is a very interesting clash sometimes between brand marketers and corporate communications colleagues, often within the same organization, whether they like it or not, those worlds are now colliding. And historical silos between companies and businesses and brands are no more. And that's a very interesting space, certainly, that we're working in at the moment.
So behind that, are you sort of suggesting, like hinting that PR's profile within an organisation has increased? I mean, that's what we'd all like to believe, isn't it? But seems to me that although we've been talking about that for the best part of 10 years, the ESG agenda has possibly made that happen more than anything else previously.
I've been doing this job a long time now, and we've had many false dawns before, haven't we, in terms of the role of comms PR within the broader mix. One thing I think I hope we will look back on, one of the positive upsides of year 2020, for all the reasons we've probably already touched upon, the role of business in society, the role of business with government, the importance of looking after your stakeholders, your staff, society at large, now of course coming into the broader ESG sustainability agenda. I think actually the role of comms has never been more important, but rather than probably you and I agreeing with each other and saying that's exactly where it should be, I think actually our clients and the C-suite have actually caught on to this, and 2020 was a helpful catalyst in that regard.
But what do you see as, because it's a slightly awkward question, that, but where do you see PR's role in ESG? And that's a thesis, right? We could be here for 2 weeks discussing that. But is it in the... Because there's a danger, I don't know about danger, but there is an element of it that PR, frankly, just helps firms communicate their good or improving ESG performance. And I'm not suggesting PR is going to own ESG. I think that's probably not quite right. I'm not sure anyone owns ESG within an organisation. That's maybe the whole point. But does PR potentially have a deeper tentacles within the ESG story other than just PRing it?
Yeah, I think it has to. Although again, I wouldn't want to undermine that role in terms of storytelling across multiple. That's why we're here. That's why we're so good at what we do. We earn people's attention. So I think on a number of levels, let me give you a couple of examples. It is not unusual for clients, whether they're brand marketers or corporate communications professionals, maybe to have undue prominence over the importance, interest, and excitement of their own ESG missions and purposes. That has always been the case and probably always will. Having, I think, therefore, smart external counsel who can look a client in the eye and actually say, yes, it's very worthy, very authentic, very credible, but, is there a demand here actually to get a level of engagement with partners, suppliers, the media, employees, society at large? And the answer to that invariably is yes, because people are quite naturally proud of what they want to do. But just doing good is not the same as being recognized for doing good. And I think sometimes, you know, clients quite naturally spend a lot of time, money, personal emotion and investment in these projects. But as everybody is now signing up for it and doing it, there's a huge role to actually tell compelling stories that engage and disrupt. I think that's one thing.
Things move quickly in that space, don't they? If you see what I mean. So, you know, best practice, you know, just looking at the carbon footprint, best practice performance a year ago compared to now, frankly, it's completely changed, isn't it? If you're going to be carbon neutral by 2030 now, no one really cares, frankly, do they? That's quite a long way away.
Well, it's benchmarking is important, isn't it? And I think this is where you get into, let's be honest with these. We're often talking about businesses here, businesses and brands. And I think business and brands, of course, when it comes to ESG and sustainability purpose, sometimes it's not a clandestine internal discussion that's going on. They want to feel sometimes that they're actually ahead of, on par with their competitive set. So I think constantly listening, talking to stakeholders, engaging with NGOs and governments is absolutely critical to that. So that's much more than promotional storytelling. I think actually, again, the comms industry is very well placed there in that sense. I've had clients before who say to me as an industry or as a sector, here is our roadmap to improvement in this space. And you go back and say, well, actually, maybe when you looked at this 6 months ago, this looked credible and laudable. Now the world has moved on, and do you really want to be standing for something where you're already behind the industry and behind where policy is going?
Sure. Now I wouldn't be doing my job, I suppose, we didn't give the ESG awards a bit of a plug. Then while we talked about it for 10 minutes or so, but do, if you're interested in the ESG, and do have a look at the ESG awards, which are linked to the UN 17 sustainability goals. But Scott, you talked a little bit about business transformation, and all businesses to a greater or lesser extent have had to transform themselves, or frankly evolve themselves pretty quickly during COVID, as we now come out of COVID. I'm touching wood as I say that. What role do you think PR has played in that? Because I suppose, some cases it's been at the centre of that story within the business, and sometimes it hasn't, has it? Can you sort of summarise the type of work you've been doing from a business transformation perspective, or is it a bit tough to generalise that?
I think it's one of these growth areas. So I think on one hand is what we're seeing a lot of at the moment, and it probably links back to the broader ESG sustainability agenda, is a lot of demand from clients effectively to say, as a result of COVID, as a result of broader digital innovation, how do we ultimately now help them to shape the role of their comms/marketing function within a wider organization? And that's not a conversation that's just about technology. Of course it isn't. It's often a conversation that's around about behavior and how you move an organization with you. I think what we've seen is often an overinvestment, quite rightly, in technology stacks and technology tools. But I think actually there has been an underinvestment until this point in time in terms of the communication based on human realities of actually making that technology work and companies move forward in that way. For me, that is a huge area of interest and opportunity for agencies like BCW, but I think it's a huge area of interest and opportunity for us as a wider industry. Is technology, of course, has a critical role to play in this, but actually so does communications and the kind of the engagement and commitment of staff and partners. So I think that's one thing.
Yeah. Now, the widely discussed, I guess, that sort of the rise of corporate PR or the reemergence of corporate PR and the renaissance, if you like, of corporate counsel. Is that a permanent shift, you think? Or is that just followed some specific needs that clients have had during COVID?
Well, as someone who celebrated their birthday last year and has probably got more grey hair than I did 10 years ago, Ben, I suppose I should say I hope so. It was definitely a factor, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, and we can discuss the whys and wherefores, that I think the demand last year for experienced senior corporate counsel grew exponentially. I found myself being called into a huge number of client interactions sometimes where I think our clients and their colleagues maybe did want a sense of senior counsel experience, just to have a sense of, are we right? You know, does it matter if we don't know all of the answers? So I think that was absolutely a factor that we saw right across the board last year. Was it a one-hit wonder? Will it all go away now? I don't think so. I think, the ESG piece, again, is highly complex, you know, way beyond just comms and storytelling, as you know. I mean, it has interactions with public affairs, with government, about how we deal with senior stakeholders. I think the world of earned media, we're all, of course, now integrated, but the importance of earned media and the need for strategic senior media council, particularly with that top tier international national media, I think they've all enjoyed a genuine resurgence that certainly as of now, and we're in a different phase in the summer of 2021, we're not seeing any let up, so let's see.
You mentioned it there, and media and the power of it. It seems to be more valuable than ever, does it? Is that it's a strange one in the sense that journalism and publishing is having a really tough time commercially, but the power of earned media seems to be more prioritised by the likes of your clients than ever.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we work, of course, with as part of integrated teams, whether they're WPP integrated teams or teams made up of a whole range of different agencies. A conversation even last week I had with one of the senior marketer at a multinational. You know, it goes back to it's a good time to be in our industry. It was, yes, they get sort of multi-channel strategy, they get multi-touch point strategy, they get all of this stuff. When the implementation plan is set before them, this client was kind of saying, yes, I expect to see all of this. The advertising has its role. It's all very interesting. But where's my moment of disruption, engagement, activation that gets people talking, gets people sharing? I think he probably didn't realize, but he was being a huge advocate for our business, our industry, amongst a sea of voices and faces on a Teams call. So I think that's absolutely right. I mean, earned media is not going away. I think it is now seen almost as a benchmark for talkability, disruption, activation, that actually can almost lead the other parts of the disciplines when we're going forward. I mean, I think our challenge and a lot of agencies like us is earned media is critical, but earned media in isolation is not enough. We talk about earned plus at BCW because, you know, our own people now need to not be too purist about the value of earned or earned first. I think it's a wonderful thing, but ultimately we're often talking about scale in terms of reach and by geography. So, you know, the beauty of a earned idea in its purest sense should absolutely sometimes go with it in terms of, well, how do you amplify, how do you actually put paid media behind that to achieve those kind of the scale that potentially historical earned media campaigns didn't have compared to those done with a media buying company with a huge budget behind it.
And where do you see that that suite of agencies now? You're in a group with lots of those agencies as part of that group. So they're, you're, I don't know, maybe your frenemies or whatever. You can answer that one. But who's going to win that battle? It is a battle. We all like to pretend it's not. But in the end, all those different agencies are trying to grab budget and therefore a bit of market share, aren't they? And I'm not suggesting one discipline is going to, win out uniformly, but it's what's your sort of the state of the market currently in that regard?
I think, yeah, I get the question is, if everybody's racing into the middle to be good at everything and integrated, ultimately, how do we differentiate even within our own sector, let alone when we're dealing with other marketing services companies? I mean, without sounding too glib, I think actually the best will always win out. Within WPP, we have relationships with huge numbers of partner companies, and I really enjoy working with those partner companies for different reasons. So, if you're into sort of genuine creative digital work, I think you have to go a long way to be more creative with a digital DNA than someone like AKQA Group. But at the same time, if you're into branding and its most modern progressive way. I mean, we have a great relationship with Landor, for instance. We even do their PR for them. But, you know, I'm talking about partners here. So I think ultimately our challenge is, even within the PR sector, it is not surprising to me that we're seeing small specialist agencies still being successful. Why? Because I think on one hand, clients want all the efficiencies of scale, consistency of quality. And that's obviously where the big holding companies like BCW come into their own. But at the same time, they want specialists. You know, they want now, in a way, the expert in where shipping meets sustainability or something else like that. Whereas our challenge as the big holding companies is we have to almost be a little bit schizophrenic in making sure that we still are able to deliver quality at scale internationally, globally, but also have the passionate specialists who also can be experts for clients where and when they are needed.
But it's difficult, isn't it? Because as you sort of alluded to there, what was your example? The sustainability of shipping expert. There's always another specialism, isn't there? Do you know what I mean? You can employ a creative, a strategist, a planner, a vertical sector specialist, but there'll always be something else. So that's an interesting point. So you kind of have these multi-layered, sometimes supplementary agencies, which just come in and offer a specific element of advice or expertise upon.
Correct. Whether they sit within WPP or outside. I mean, we even work with special advisors in certain sectors purely because that we may not need them 100% of the time, but they have a level of experience and capability that for a certain client, you know, you just have to embrace and bring on. It's the same reason, though, why we now have invested such a huge amount of time in having a consistent operating system within the business, because, the days of having an exclusively healthcare client that only wants to reach out to, you know, an agency that has healthcare pharma experience are well and truly gone. We need now to be able to bring in paid influencer, brand marketing, maybe even a level of policy and public affairs to a healthcare brief. When we, you know, show up with a client, it's not just enough to say we have expertise from various different disciplines. There is an expectation now that we look at a client problem in a similar way. We use the same language. We understand the planning cycle. So that for us has been a huge investment over recent years, that we do now have an operating system that, you know, the test is if you go into any BCW office, certainly in my region, whether it's in Helsinki or London, is they should understand effectively the way the consistent way we approach a client problem. And you should never in a way be able to see the lines in terms of either office or practice. Yes, you might have a specific expert on the team, but they are still part of the team. And that ultimately delivers better outcomes, in my view.
Does that mean then you sort of reckon that, I know that this has always been a sort of positioning thing. I've never been sure whether it's actual reality that, there is a sort of a way of working, almost like an IP that differentiates, I don't know, BCW to Edelman to Weber and various independents as well. Do you think if we didn't tell you which office you went into and turned you around in a circle numerous times and chucked you in an Edelman office, you reckon you'd be able to work out that wasn't a their way of doing things was different to yours, different to Weber? Do you think that is the case, or is it not quite as defined as that?
I think, I can't speak for other agencies, but I think the true test for a BCW office in Europe, for instance, is if you came in with a challenge, you know, about a brief or PR moment or similar, and would you get a similar response and a way of addressing your brief and the way we would propose taking that on between different offices? I think the answer to that is yes, you would see the consistency. You might still see a bit of local nuance in ideas and activation, but we work very hard, not just in creating the IP or the operating system, as we call it, but constantly replenishing it and actually making sure that, you know, we train our people to do it. Because fundamentally, we do have a belief that if you get that right, it's efficient and it's more effective, because, you know, you're not strangers, whether you're from different offices or from different practices. You actually have a kind of a code for this is the way we tackle it. And phase one becomes another phase, and it happens all very seamlessly, and there's big decision-making moments. So I'd love to put that to the test one day, Ben, but take you to Brussels and then to Paris and back to London and see if that's true. I'd like to think it was.
Well, no, it's given me a bit of a nice feature idea, actually, just to sort of, I don't know whether we create an imaginary brief or whether we put PR moment as the brief, but we could, you know, go around various different PR firms and film the briefing session and film the response and then you know, just stick it on the site and see what everyone says. I'm not going to pick a winner.
I think it's a good idea, and I would absolutely encourage you to do something that PR Moment's going for and get a bit of a senior PR counsel in there at the same time.
Well, no, I'd film it and stick it up so everyone could make their own view on it. Do you think that the look and the feel of PR firms is going to be particularly different post COVID than coming into it? I'm scratching my head a bit on that one. It seems to me that maybe everything's changed, but not that much has changed in many ways.
Well, just to let you into kind of my live anxieties at the moment, Ben, and as this conversation is just between you and I think where I'm standing at the moment is. I am genuinely concerned and almost intrigued by what we are going to see, because looking just across Europe, for instance, is I think the level of demand for talent in certain sectors at the moment, coupled with this sort of sense of natural readiness for change, rejuvenation, replenishment, the growth of demands for skills that go way beyond PR agencies or even traditional in-house recruitment, but from management consultancies and even other agencies within the marketing services sector, is add all of that into the mix. And, you know, on one hand, this is a great time to be talented in our sector. I mean, you know, I wish I was 20 years younger in many respects. At the same time, it's putting huge levels of pressure on agencies of all shapes and stripes to actually have not only a compelling reason for their talent to stay with them, but equally a compelling differentiating reason for why, and obviously in our case, BCW is, you know, should be the, you know, the agency catnip for anyone who has, you know, got ambition and aspiration to build a great career in our industry. I mean, the battle lines are drawn at the moment and talent wars are fierce right now.
Yeah. And that, it all sort of works as long as client fees keep going up, doesn't it? But it fairly obviously, if salaries go up significantly at a significantly more rapid percentage than client fees, then there becomes a point when you can't quite do it anymore, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, again, I'm seeing some, you know, crazy numbers being bandied around at the moment, even within our own agency in terms of offers. And there will always be a reason for that. I think actually one of the things we are seeing is, yes, remuneration is one of the factors for people deciding to join or to leave. But I think there are many more at the moment. I mean, I think the whole future of office space, career conversations, and whether you can build careers in a kind of hybrid virtual world as much as you could in a kind of classic 5 days a week office space. What people now potentially want differently out of their lives and careers that maybe we were all thinking in the first quarter of 2020. You know, you've been working from home, I know, just as I have been. I think anybody who hasn't had a sort of a sense of reflection about what's the world going to look like and what's my place within it, I think either must just be too busy or probably in denial. But I think we've all had those thoughts, surely. And
I think I've probably been too busy. Well, maybe
you're leaving house, aren't you? So there you go. You've got your own project already underway. So
that's interesting, though. Yes, I think that's a good point, isn't it? Because very often with those sorts of decisions as people, we sort of think, well, this is what's happened and I now need to evolve my life accordingly. But of course, the reality is it's only ever a moment in time, isn't it? So you think, oh, I'm going to do this, so I'm going to do that. But, you know, who's to say in 6 months' time that decision might not look quite as clever it does now as it did 6 months ago, if you see what I mean? And things are changing quite quickly at the moment, aren't they, in terms of working environments and working setups. So it'll be it's quite a brave move at the moment, isn't it? I mean, I see a lot of people moving out, and then but they probably do want to go into the office very much. They've got, you know, hour and a half commutes, and having done a few of those in my life, that's, you know, it's all right for some people, but it certainly wasn't for me, and it might not be for lots as well. Where do you, I mean, just you touched on it about capacity in PR firms. Seems to be a lot of PR firms already massively reduced their office capacity. So if people did all want to come back 5 days a week, a lot of firms would have a problem, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting discussion for all agencies, whether you're hiring whether you have 10 people or 1,000 people, is that I think there is a collision of slightly different forces here, isn't there? So I think on one hand is people are embracing the spirit of the future of hybrid office working. And I think they do recognize that in the main, what we're seeing is a demand for more flexibility compared to the first quarter of 2020. But couple that with, I think, also a recognition that everybody, and I don't just mean junior people, but maybe for different reasons, new starters, junior people, is great things will only happen when people collaborate together in terms of, I don't mean just client work, but people's mental health and well-being. Just those kind of accidental, fortuitous moments that we all used to love when bouncing ideas off somebody in the corridor. I think that absolutely is true. But at the same time is, from a capacity perspective, is what is the point for an agency in central London, for instance, buying effectively 100 very expensive desks when actually you may only need 50 going forwards if you're running a 3+2 model. And if you are therefore able to save significant amounts of money, you know, what do you do with it? Is it about sending it straight to the bottom line and improving your profit margin, or is it about also using some of that saving for incremental training, personal career development, better equipment in people's homes? So I think it's not a bad thing, I think, that we're talking about capacity issues. I mean, PR agencies are ultimately one of the ultimate flex businesses. As businesses grow, they will always have an opportunity to flex. But I do think maybe, yes, on the financial side, as a result of the pandemic, I think very quickly we've seen a pressure to immediately start to think, how do we ultimately save money? Because we're not going to need all this huge space that we used to have in 2020.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I wonder where we'll end up on that. Because, I mean, where have you sort of made much of a decision on the extent of your flexible working policy yet? Or is that still work in progress?
It's a work in progress, and I think it will remain a work in progress because, you know, I look after a region, so I'm always slightly sensitive to any global directive about, you know, return to work or futures of working, because I think this is a moment where I need to know my own limits. So, yes, we can have guiding principles which are based on a level of flexibility and being client-centric and our own people-centric. But at the same time, you know, we're not out of the woods yet, as we are probably going to see this week just in the UK. We must be guided by, you know, national law. We also need to be guided essentially by what our own industry and our competitors are doing in different markets as well. I do think there are some fault lines to come there, because you mentioned it yourself, is that one of the beauties, I think, of last year is we were able to allow people to, you know, head off to distant, sunny, green uplands on the coastline because there was no expectation to come back into the office, often still receiving London salaries because that was their option. Now, of course, I think those people may be prepared to potentially be back in the office for 1 or 2 days a week. But of course, I think, let's see, I think the demand already for client meetings and for clients to get back into a face-to-face physical environment. And that's a good thing, by the way. I think that's going to come back thick and fast. But will that create a bit of a two-speed a workforce then? I think if you're a team of four working with a client and you and one of your colleagues are within an hour striking distance from London, but you've got a colleague living in, you know, the Highlands of Scotland and another on the Norfolk coast, who is it who's always going to come under pressure to do those face-to-face client meetings going forwards? And will people be happy effectively to be in, you know, one of those two camps?
I suspect not, but there is a practical reality to that, isn't there? Yeah. It's a difficult one, that, because you can see both sides of that debate, can't you? Neither side of that debate is wrong. It's just how do you create a balance between them, isn't it? Because in the end of the day, face-to-face is a really good, positive, place to be for great collaboration, isn't it? And on the other side of that, there's no point doing a 2-hour commute to go and sit in an office writing emails. So it's you know, where do you put yourself on that map, I suppose, is a difficult one.
Well, I think, you know, I think we've been, I think most people I've spoken to, I think we've been genuinely even-handed. And I think absolutely flexibility has been the order of the day. And I think, and I'm talking for our entire industry because I have colleagues working at other agencies. I think the ability of this industry to literally re-pivot their entire businesses in the kind of the second quarter of last year, and our clients to do the same, was pretty nothing short of remarkable. That, I think, commitment to being ultra flexible on every level is it was, you know, was well-intentioned and has been a good thing. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I generally don't know what the future will bring if we do end up in a kind of a demand for more physical FaceTime, because having allowed people, potentially or hired people to live and work in Anglesey, Inverness or Great Yarmouth, it's very difficult then for an agency, a management team to start saying, you know, need all to decamp back to London and or be in the office 4 days a week. I don't think that's acceptable.
No, but I mean, I've got to move on to the next question, but PR is not in its own bubble on that, is it? I mean, there's plenty of other virtual businesses, well, not but a lot of other businesses of similar structure are having that's exactly the same quandary, shall we say.
Yeah, totally right.
Now, listen, the merger of Burson and Kernan Wolf, blimey, there you go, it's become a...
I just say the BCW these days, Ben, it's so much easier.
Yes, but that merger happened about 3 years ago now. That's a while back, but it's an interesting case study, isn't it? There's been plenty of PR mergers over the years that haven't quite worked out. And broadly, anyway, the merger of BCW does seem to have gone quite well. So, and it was huge, right? It's one of the biggest mergers we've seen in public relations ever. Give us some lessons from that, Scott. What do you think are some of the reasons why it went so well?
Well, I think a good question, and obviously a timely question, because did it work well? I think it has worked well, and obviously it was great that, I think we're now a mere agency of the year, actually, which is a phenomenal thing, I think, given only three years ago the merger happened. I don't know if I'd like to give lessons, because I think that's not the way to look at this. I think there are probably some mistakes we made, and therefore maybe some things we wouldn't do again, and things that we tried and they worked quite well. So I would probably say guiding principles. I don't know if I have five, but let me give you a few. I think in retrospect, and I mean we are 3 years on, I think the moving quickly at the time of the merger, I think that was one I would definitely hold true to if I was being asked for advice about how to do this. To do this well, I think quite naturally when you merge businesses together, there's lots of important decisions to be made about, you know, where our office will be, who our leader will be, which culture should prevail. You know, will I still get to sit next to my friend? Well, there are all those hugely important questions which you could spend a hell of a long time having committees about. I think actually sometimes anxiety comes when people don't know the answer. My read is that by making decisions as quickly as feasibly possible with a level of due diligence, you then are able to communicate clearly to everybody in the organization. And I think, a bit like the dentist, the fear of something is much worse than actually often a reality of saying to someone, this is what we're doing and why we're doing it. And that is something I would hold dear. Culture, I think it goes without saying, build a new one. Don't try and effectively make choices. BCW, which as I call it now, I don't even refer to the Burson and the Kernan Wolf. BCW is a new business. Very early on, we overinvested in the importance of culture, both at a global level and a regional level. And we involved the entire business in the importance of creating that culture. It was not relegated to a HR or talent silo. And I think that, again, I would say to everybody, if you can get culture right, you're halfway there. Linked to that, I think early demand as well to drive innovation in terms of new BCW products, IP propositions. Why? Because that's the lifeblood of all agencies. But as you can imagine, we were talking about it earlier, is client raises question, are you using legacy firm or legacy firm's way of doing something? And that, I think, is just a road to chaos and kind of a lack of coordination. I think very quickly, you want to get people behind new exciting things that you have developed as BCW and not as a legacy firm. So I think that would be really important. And embrace change, Ben. I think that's the other thing as well, is whether or not you're a business that's merged or not, is we all, I think, embrace change. We look at last year. Change is never permanent, as we know. And I think that's the spirit that you take people on in terms of where you're going, which is being humble, I think, and human, to the extent that I don't have all of the answers either about the way it's going to be. Trust me, it will be okay, I think, if you deliver on your promises. And as I said, is do take regular soundings from what people think and the way that they're feeling. Doesn't mean you always have the ability to act on everybody's personal views, but a lot of human empathy and listening has to go into all of this, but not at the expense of quick decision making.
And just finally, you know, clearly you have a role across Europe and Africa. Not sure to say you have a global perspective, but I've no doubt when it comes to the public relations market, you keep your eye on things globally. How would you say the different regions have fared since the start of COVID?
So I sit on the global board of BCW. So obviously I do have an interest in the global business, but of course my primary responsibility and interest is the region. So what does that tell me? Well, I think actually, and I see this from other holding companies, North America and Asia, I think, were relatively resilient in terms of the pandemic last year for different reasons. I think Europe, it was a much more mixed picture. Both based in terms of geography and on sector. You know, when I look back in terms of those difficult times, probably at the beginning of April of last year, that was the time when in certain sectors, depending on who your client base, which geography you were operating in, you know, we had an uncomfortable kind of, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, which is clients were going out of business, clients were freezing budgets. You almost wondered about, you know, whether that client would even have a future and what would be the implications of the agency. I'm pleased to say, I think, that this region, because this is the way our industry operates, has a real great opportunity this year to bounce back in style. That's what we're seeing. On one hand, you would say, well, that's as it should be, because if we, of course, took our hits a little bit more in 2020 than North America, say, therefore, we would expect the European and Africa region, for instance, to push back this year. And I think that's what we're seeing. And that's a good thing because, you know, obviously, I work for Donna. She's the global CEO of BCW. I think you must look at your different regions almost a bit like you look at an investment portfolio, which is, yes, we're delighted when every region is cooking on gas at exactly the same time. But often what we see is just, you know, different shifts and timings in terms of sectors and geographies. I think this is a good time to be operating in Europe at the moment. We are global leaders, if you ask me, in things like ESG, sustainability, purpose. We're doing a lot of lit comms now in terms of, you know, US into Europe, China into Europe. I think our creativity, and I say this and I've said this to Donna, is I think creativity of our industry in Europe is significantly ahead of what I see in most parts of the world. So, you know, maybe Europe does not have the kind of the exponential year-on-year growth of the tiger economies in Asia and maybe some of the predictions we're seeing with Biden's US at the moment. But I think there are many reasons to be cheerful at the moment about whether you're in an agency culture and internal comms in our industry. I think there's a lot that we should all be looking forward to.
Brilliant. Scott, on that positive note, I shall wrap things up. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.